RDU 98.5, you are tuning in to Breakfast here, and my name is Bex, and today on the phone we have got the incredible Gareth Shute to talk about his awesome three-part series that he has done for the Audio Culture Audio Antiquing. So, Gareth, how are you going today?
You're right. Yep. Yeah, I'm good. I did this piece for the Audio Culture website. Yeah, two parts are about the rise of the MP3 and streaming, and the other part is about Chris Hockard, who owns the company that first started helping New Zealanders put their songs onto iTunes and then onto Spotify, and then last year he sold it to an overseas company for God knows how much.
Oh, Lordy, yeah, I'd hate to think how much, hey? But that actually segues perfectly into the first question I wanted to ask you, which was just, can you give us all a really quick rundown of, you know, this three-part story that you've written here?
Well, the beginning, it starts, you know, you've got to pass your mind back to the sort of CD era. You know, it's amazing how dominant CDs were, like, especially Christchurch acts, weirdly, in New Zealand, like Big Runga and stuff could sell like 165,000 CDs, and even like Scribe, you know, he sold, I think, 75,000 CDs in New Zealand and 40,000 in Australia or something, like crazy numbers. But the record companies got so powerful in the market that they could do these kind of rude things, like Fearless was another big CD selling band, and when one of their albums, I think it was the second one, Playground Battle, when it didn't sell enough, you know, 9 months later they just released another version with an extra CD with some more tracks to sell more copies. So that meant all the people who bought that first CD were like stuck without these extra five tracks, so either they had to buy a whole new CD for like $30, you know, it's a lot of money back then, or they just missed out. So you can see what the push was when MP3s came through and suddenly people had this technology that allowed them to like email songs backwards and forwards because they were such small file types.
Wow.
So that's where it starts, I guess.
Oh, man, no, that's incredibly insightful, especially when you put it like that about how one you can get one little MP3 and it's only got one thing, but the next one's going to have, you know, $30 and you've got way more on it. Oh, my gosh. It would feel like a rip-off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the story covers digital music generally, but, I mean, even CDs were digital, but what you've got to understand is the MP3 format that made the big change. Basically, these researchers found that there's certain wavelengths that sort of cancel each other out, or sounds that cancel each other out, or sounds that can't really be heard that well with the human ear. And so they just use that information to make the file type smaller and smaller. So as opposed to like a WAV file or one of the file types that you'd get on a CD, which you could never email, especially back then when data was so expensive, suddenly there's this tiny format that was enough to email backwards and forwards. And at first people couldn't store heaps on their own computer to share with everyone. So that's when they made up this thing called peer-to-peer sharing, which was what Napster, the big pirating place, was all about. And that basically meant if you want to get MP3s off their service, then basically you have to open up your own computer so that anyone can get your MP3s off you. So that's what it means, peer-to-peer. So the computers shared these MP3s right across the world. And soon there was just any MP3 you wanted available anywhere, and the record label suddenly just, their business for selling CDs just went through the floor, basically, is what happened.
Wow. And so when did that, like, do you have a rough time estimate of when that actually did happen?
Yeah, so the story kind of covers that whole early period. The first part covers, like, the late 90s and early 2000s when Napster came up and that happened, and how that affected New Zealand, and how the record companies sued Napster out of existence. But then all these other things like LimeWire and Pirate Bay and stuff came up. So it was a bit like whack-a-mole. And companies in New Zealand, you know, they, like Sony would put, or EMI would put like DRM protection on their CDs so you couldn't download them to your computer or whatever to try and stop it. But it all just, you know, wily people got around all that. And so instead the idea was it was going to be iTunes. And weirdly, another story I tell is about Vodafone Music, which was another big player in that market at the beginning. And Morgan Donoghue, this New Zealander, was actually in charge of their worldwide music strategy at one point and stuff. So it's kind of interesting to see New Zealanders popping up. And I guess the other point is that even though it had this downside that suddenly you couldn't sell music so expensively on CD and iTunes didn't really replace it. At the same time, suddenly your music, when you did put it on like MySpace or YouTube when it very first started, it was accessible worldwide. So I give these examples of like Lady Hawk and even like the dubstep band Mount Eden just getting like millions of YouTube views back in like 2009 and finding this worldwide audience that could tap into them online for the first time. So it was an interesting change.
Yeah, especially I think I like that you've covered it about the arrival of, you know, YouTube and everything like that, because it was extremely pivotal, because then it started, you know, that whole creation of a visual as well as the audio, rather than you've just, you know, like with LimeWire, you would only really get just the MP3, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so it did mean you could find an audience, and after a while there was a money stream there. I mean, YouTube streams, if you're big enough, that they're worth a lot more than a Spotify stream, because you can put an ad on a YouTube video. So you see acts like Chai or Princess Chelsea, people like that who do really strong visuals and have massive views, you know, potentially, especially Princess Chelsea, can make a decent amount of money off that side of things.
No, you're so right there. And, you know, when we look through the first one that you've done here, you know, New Zealand Music Goes Digital 1, you talk about Lorde and how the most striking digital breakthrough within that era was her. Could you just expand a little bit more into that story there as to why it was such a striking deal?
Well, it's funny because, you know, it was pre-streaming still, so she put that song up as a free MP3 download first, and it just meant it could go viral. You know, that's the first era of going viral really happening, where people were emailing it to each other, sharing it on Facebook and stuff, and then she could just build up this big sort of snowball that was rolling and gathering snow, and then when it was at its peak, she just took it down as free and then sold MP3s, and that was enough to get it like top of the US charts. And I guess before that, New Zealand bands had gone overseas and got a certain level of success, but you can never really tell. I mean, I wrote for this blog, The Corner, back then, and we started doing a YouTube top 10, because suddenly you could see bands like Brooke Fraser or Lady Hawk or Mount Eden and be like, wow, they've got millions of streams, even though they're not on the charts back here. It was like crazy.
No, it's definitely crazy. It was a very funny time when that happened. I remember when everybody was streaming Lorde, and it would just, no matter what you tuned into, it was Royals seemed to be on the air, hey?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the funny thing with streaming, though, like you think, you know, in the MP3 era, it was all about owning these files, these digital files called MP3s. And people, if you told them, oh no, you have to pay a certain amount each month and then you get access to these songs, but you don't own any of them, then I think back then people would have freaked out. So I think it took a while for people to accept, oh, wait a minute, it is an okay deal. Even though I don't own anything, I get access to everything. Like, it was quite a mental shift from like owning a pile of MP3s, which you'd share with friends, which was extremely clunky. I don't know if you're old enough to have had an iPod and tried to move a song from a CD to a computer to an iPod, but it was a pain in the ass. Whereas streaming, you know, I guess it waited for data to get fast enough as well. Like, you couldn't have really had Spotify in 2000. You wouldn't have been able to stream an MP3 from your phone. No. Phones just didn't have that sort of data.
Yeah, they didn't have that capability, did they?
Yeah, so the whole mentality's changed. It's funny.
Definitely. RDU 98.5, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Audio Antiquing, where we're here with Gareth Shute with his incredible three-part story on just the wonders and the amazing parts of MP3s. Gareth, you know, when we dive a little bit more into, you know, the article, within the second one, you have this beautiful bit here at the start talking about the bedroom to boardroom approach with, you know, NZ On Air and New Zealand Music. Could you just divulge a little bit more into this?
Yeah, well, there was a crazy interim between MP3s and iTunes and all that and the start of Spotify, where no one knew what was happening next. And so NZ On Air did fund these projects that were kind of Interesting. But I mean, that was Brendan Smythe's idea that we, you know, he knew somehow we could use the internet to get music out to people. So there was these websites like NZ Music Manager, which was a video game which tried to gamify discovering music, where you played a manager of like Princess Chelsea or Street Chant. Or there was like a weird mixtape website started by James Coleman that was, I mean, it was kind of like a Spotify mixtape, but it was all clunky online, you know. So and so, yeah, I give some of those examples before I describe how Spotify took off, and then I get into how that's changed the current world, I guess, and how music discovery is now through TikTok and, you know, Instagram and stuff. It's like so different.
It is. It's become, there has been a major trajectory shift in that, especially. And I really like how within this article you talk about, you know, SoundCloud and the whole, you know, SoundCloud era and how that's kind of come in there. Could you talk a bit more about the Lil Bubblegum artist there?
Yeah, well, I think if you imagine back to the beginning of the story where you're trying to sell CDs, there's no way a small artist could press a CD in New Zealand and convince, or just to even convince one record store in America to stock it in like 2000, like that would be hard enough, let alone reaching, you know, a few thousand people, like enough people in America that you could fly over and have some shows and do a career. But now there's all these different routes, not just Spotify, not just YouTube, but yeah, SoundCloud had its own like rap era of like SoundCloud rap, and Lil Bubblegum really started there just putting songs up. You know, he's done quite a few songs, but then, of course, one blew up, and then it went from SoundCloud to Spotify. Now he's got, like, over 100 million streams, and he hasn't had to touch any part of the music industry, really. You know, I mean, he's touched Spotify and SoundCloud, but he hasn't been near a record label or managers or publishers or any of that old guard that would have put up gates for him to get through. And the same kind of crazy things, like, you know, the Christchurch artist Flip Grader, I saw one of her songs was called Marry Me. And I feel like people probably just found that when they were searching on Spotify for a song called Marry Me. You know, songs can actually just have a purpose like that. And then it's got 2 million streams. And on TikTok, it's even funnier because How Bizarre, you know, which was the biggest sort of CD hit of the 90s from New Zealand. Now it's on TikTok because, of course, when people make a video of something weird happening, it's perfect to put How Bizarre on it.
Yeah.
And then the same with Princess Chelsea, I Love My Boyfriend, that just blew up. I mean, I help at her record label and, you know, we had to work out what TikTok was almost because her songs blew up so suddenly and so quickly through people just realizing, oh, this is the perfect song for this sort of video. And so, yeah, it's a total different way of A, using music, and B, discovering it.
It is. It's a completely different world. And I really like how within, you know, this article, when you're reading it, it really does talk about, you know, the viral superstars and the just the absolute crazy viralness of how one night you just have a song and you're like, oh, that's a great song. Yeah, it might have done well a couple times ago, but time to focus on new music. And then the next morning you wake up and the song's blown up. You know, Benny's track, Glitter, and or like Super Lonely, all of those ones, they really have blown up.
Yeah, they're
as well.
Yeah, from dance videos, just people finding it. And, you know, someone in New Zealand, I think, Glitter first, someone did a little dance to it. And then other people were like, oh, that's a cool dance and a cool track to do a dance to. And so it became through those dances, the track Glitter blew up and then Super Lonely blew up off the back of that. And so it just got bigger and bigger. It's kind of crazy how that can happen.
It is. It is really crazy. And, you know, my question for you would be, what do you think the next big streaming surge is going to be? Do you think there's going to be a big shift?
Well, it's difficult because on one hand, Spotify is getting a lot more murky with like bot farms and Spotify itself buying songs off songwriters, like completely buying all the rights to the song and filling up their ambient playlists and stuff with just songs they've produced. So on one hand, it's getting much worse and it's limiting in certain fields, in jazz and ambient, I think especially, you'd be up against Spotify's own weird fake bands. But in other ways, I think, yeah, there's always a potential for another small act like Nine Lives or Sampra. There's these kind of hip hop acts that have really found their way through that. And then, I mean, I've got another article for Audio Culture about billion streamers and some of the people who contribute to worldwide hits by Rihanna and Post Malone and stuff are just people working in their bedrooms in New Zealand, you know, sometimes in rural backyards. So I think there's just that reach. You just have to, it's a massive crowded field, but if you can raise your hand up in that crowd, you've got such a potential to reach so much further. And I think that Kiwis being so innovative, it's going to continue to be the case that New Zealanders punch above their weight.
I totally agree there. And I think that's a really beautiful final note to end on there, Gareth. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And people can check out the whole article on Audio Culture, the website. And thanks for having me. Yeah.
No, thank you. Thank you so much, Gareth. RDU 98.5. This has been another beautiful episode of Audio Antiquing with Gareth Shute. And he has written an incredible 3-part story there. You can find it on Audio Culture online. And you will also be able to find it through the link on our website. So thank you so much, listeners.